caught up with us a little later. So, Becky, if you're ready, we'll call this conference committee meeting to order. It is May 10th, and it's 9:06, and with us are Senator Ellis, Ellis, Representative Brown, myself, Representative Bundy, Senator Green, and Representative Veazey, and we have the task before us come up with a compromise on the House Bill 123. Just as an opening statement, the goal of this bill was three-pronged to increase servicing for the students, to increase loan limits for students, and to shore up financial stability of the student loan fund, namely address some of the high default rates so that the bond market would feel more comfortable. We did have a period a year ago where our bonds went uninsured. They were insured last time because of some management changes and I think because of the goal moving toward what this bill had is attempting to do. I think, I'm not sure whether the senators got copies of the letters from AMBEC, the agency that insures the bonds, and Mr. McCormick, do you have the copies of those letters handy?
I think it makes them.
Well, we'll go on while you're making us, but any expressing concerns that we need to address the default rate. And so that's where we're at. We have a House and a Senate version. I think the main differences are four amendments, and with that, I'd like to open to the committee for discussion. Representative Brown.
Thank you. I support the goals of the bill and would like to see us have a good compromise that works for the corporation, the student loan corporation. I am concerned about adequate loan amounts for the technical and vocational area. We had a long debate about that in-house finance, and we adopted some limits up there that were between what's now the Senate version and the House version. Those are written in really small on the sheet. And one thing I noticed that I forgot to write on the sheet is under the category, the second category down, less than 30, but at least 20, the House finance version was 5,500 there. That was also out of the HES version, too. Let's see. I believe.
Excuse me, you're less than 30, but at least 20 is 55, which is the current loan amount. Is that what you mentioned?
Right, yeah. There on the full time in the House version there, we had.
The House version at 65.
Well, that's the House floor amendment.
Okay.
I'm talking about the committee work that was done. We did some work in committee on this issue. We took a lot of testimony. We listened to representatives of the private schools, and I think there was an acknowledgement around the table, both majority and minority members, that at least that the 3,000 was low, the 1,000 was low, that it would actually keep people from being able to attend these trainings and get, I'm sorry?
Are you talking about less than 30 or less than 20?
I'm talking about the less than 30 but at least 20, the middle category there. In the House HES version of House Bill 257, it was 5,500 to a full-time student or 2,000 to a half-time student if the full or half-time student is attending career education that is 9 or more months in length and otherwise eligible. He's nodding yes. So anyway, where I have penciled in under the lowest, under the bottom category, less than 20 but at least 10, I penciled in there 4,000 and 1,500. Those were the House adopted, House Finance Committee adopted changes to what came to us from HES. So we took some debate on whether those limits were realistic, and adopted those numbers. So I guess I would like, personally, I think there's a lot of merit in having a high enough loan amount that we can continue to encourage people to get all kinds of technical training that's available. Not everybody's cut out to go to college. I realize it's a balancing act between a sound student loan program, but I support having the student loan program do technical and vocational training. I think that's really important as we get into welfare reform, that we not close down current options for people to get training that could lead to employment.
Let me acknowledge the presence of Representative Phillips and Senator Phillips. It's the room, it's the atmosphere. Senator Phillips,
You just started?
Yeah, okay. And we're just addressing this sheet here. Okay. Representative Brown had asked that we add under the less than 30 but at least 20-week program under full-time, she has penciled in 5,500 there, and then also in that column are 4,000 and 1,500.
I'm sorry, you just lost me. What are we talking about?
On the Senate version, or to the right of the Senate version, she has penciled in 4,000, 1,500, and then 55. Next to the 4,500.
That was what House Finance adopted, those penciled in numbers, after some debate about what would be good limits, because there was some concern.
I don't see these numbers.
Okay.
I'm just saying that was what House Finance did, and it goes right there.
That's fine.
And that I would submit that as a reasonable compromise to come between the two versions.
Mr. Chairman, do you plan to take comments from Mr. McCormick and other folks?
Keep the folks available for questions if we have questions. I think we heard enough testimony on this. They're certainly available as a resource.
Well, I guess I would pose a question to some of the folks of what they think of that, of Representative Brown's motion.
So, well, it's not a motion.
This proposal. Let's discuss a little further because.
Okay, let me make sure I got this right here. Okay, under the less than 30, but at least 20 weeks, okay, you're proposing 5,500? Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. And then half-time is at 1,500?
Right below that, in the middle category, still would be 2,000, same as the Senate
okay,
version.
Okay, and then less than 20, but at least 10 weeks, full-time, you're suggesting 4,000, half-time 1,500? That what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I bring that forward for consideration because, like I said, that's what House Finance came down on House Bill 257 when we debated and considered what would be an appropriate limit. And I realize, you know, there's the House, what's listed as House version on this sheet reflects the House floor amendment.
Okay.
And I'd say I also do support the 6 weeks because I think there are some good programs that would be eliminated relative to the status quo if we go for the 10. So I would like to see that element of the House floor amendment retained in our bill.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the concerns I have is, and I'm going from memory now, this group of people get about 20% of total loans, and yet the default rate is around 40% or something to that effect, which in turn might affect the whole student loan program due to the bonds. I want to see what effect that would have on the bond rating, the default, so on and so forth, before I make a decision.
I had asked that the letters from AMBEC and
I saw that. From Evan Dodge.
And they have essentially said that the amended House version, I think in cut to the chase on those letters, mm-hmm. the amended House version does not send a good message regarding our bond rating.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Ellis.
I'm brand new to the Post Secondary Education Commission, but I'm under the impression that there's a vast difference between different types and of training schools and length of those programs in terms of their default rate, that some have a pretty good record in comparison to institutions of higher learning and some have an absolutely atrocious record, it may be that, I mean, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that the Post-Secondary Education Commission and the director have very general powers and broad, or powers that allow them to affect all training schools in like manner, when maybe the situation calls for more precise kinds of efforts to get some of these things under control. I'm not sure that Mr. McCormick has the ability in current statute, and I'm not proposing in terms of this bill, but maybe for future legislative efforts, that he and the commission have more ability to get the real problem under control, and not to, because we're dealing with loan limits here and time limits on career education programs that are maybe too broad in general and don't, I mean, affect some of the schools with a good track record when we're really trying to get out those with a very poor track record. So maybe I'll be able to figure out if that's an accurate assessment and see where we can go in the future. But I think that's one of the boxes we're in here, is that he can't really get at the problem schools, and now we're considering limits that affect everybody very broadly, and it's caused a lot of consternation. So, and I will request, once we have a motion before us, that we take some brief comments, not to slow things down, but some brief comments from some of the affected parties, and especially Mr. McCormick.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think I agree in general with your comments. 90% of the loan recipients aren't the problem, but even the best of the proprietary schools have an incredibly high default rate that's more than twice what a traditional school is. And some of them, I don't know if you've seen the figures, bartending school, 50% plus default rate. This does two things. One, it impacts the reputation of the student loan program when we go to sell bonds. The other thing that it does is, I think it really is a disservice to these students who are encouraged into programs that, for one reason or another, do not serve them well, and then they will not, because they think they've not been treated fairly, or cannot, because they don't have employment, repay their loans. And I'm, as I've mentioned to some of my colleagues, perhaps a little overly sensitive in this area, because having preceded you on the commission, I've read many of these letters of people who are feeling ill-used. And it is unfortunate that these schools are not, don't go through some accrediting process, because once the students get a student loan, they assume the imprint of the state, some imprint of approval. And so they're kind of angry with the student loan, probably angry, displaced anger because of themselves and with the school. And anyway, we end up with a default problem that it isn't just the problem for the student loan system, certainly a problem for some individuals, as Representative Brown pointed out, probably don't need further problems in their lives.
Representative Phillips.
Senator
okay.
Phillips.
I had it for 16 years. Mr. Chairman, I don't know what your process is going to be. I assume we're probably going to come back later. Maybe I'm assuming too much. But if you do, I'd suggest that before we make any decisions, that each and every one of you at least take a glance at this audit that was released in February this year, dealing with the post-secondary, in conjunction to what we're doing. So that's one suggestion I would make.
I would prefer that we come to conclusion here at this meeting, because we are.
Okay. That's fine.
As I know, the legislature is on the fast track right now, and it appears to me we have two broad general choices. We can let the bill die for this year, and come back anew next year with even higher default rates, so that we have more ammunition to discuss this, or we can come up with a reasonable compromise. Now, Representative Brown has given us a compromise that involves some loan amount changes, plus she'd like to change the 10 weeks to 6 weeks. I guess I would propose another compromise that would leave the loan amounts the same and then accept the 6-week change. We also have some other issues to address, and those are the amendments that allow inmates to get loans. I would indicate that to the committee, I think that that's a minor problem because there are only probably 4 or 5 people who are actually going to be involved in that. The other two, we have the amendments before us. One allowed people that are in AmeriCorps be part of it. It has no impact on the loan. I don't think, and I would encourage us not to be concerned about that. And yet, the fourth says that in reclaiming bad debts, we take a third, or the student loan takes a third position behind child support and crime victims. And again, I don't think that either one of those would have any impact at all on the financial security of the future of the student loan program. So really what we have to deal with, I think, in the main is the amount change and the time change. And Representative Brown, if you want to make a motion. Please do. Senator Green.
You know, when I was first looking at this, for 30 or more weeks, that is what we would normally say is full, 2 full semesters in school. And that's a full school year. And I think we'd be fooling ourselves if we ever thought that the $6,500 was intended to do that full tuition. And that's certainly not the point of what we're doing. Right? The half-time student, 3,000. And these are all fairly in line proportionally. And less than 30 weeks, but at least 20 is certainly even more than two-thirds if you're going down to 20. And but when we get down to less than 20, that's a really a very, and but at least 10, that's a really a very short course. And at least 6 weeks. I mean, 6 weeks for that amount is scarcely in proportion to what we are making available as assistance, not full tuition, not full. And I think that the overall future of that program is has to be kept in mind.
Well, and you bring out a very good point. Even at the full-time university graduate student, certainly $9,500 is not going to cover all the expenses going to that school. And some of the folks who attend the shorter proprietary schools, I think, have the feeling that the loan should cover all their expenses. And I think, knowing human nature, it's best if there's some other investment, some personal investment. And again, of course, I get into problems with people not having a great deal of money. I would say those on welfare and whatnot do have access to other programs, but I guess I wanted a motion for discussion, and I'm not indicating that I support the motion, but then we could have a starting point. Representative Veazey?
Mr. Chairman, I think from the discussion I've heard both here and on the floor, there are a lot of questions here, a lot of concern. However, I think that because we do not fund the student loan fund itself, it is a self-sustaining fund. We don't subsidize it anymore. Those days are gone. I think that we do need to put our hat of fiduciary responsibility on ahead of our desires as legislatures to be social engineers and take the conservative approach for now, the fiduciary conservative approach for now, and recognize that we do need to come back next year and look at this again. And with that, I would move that we adopt the Senate version.
There's been a motion to adopt the Senate version, and I assume that means the Senate numbers and the 10 weeks. Is that
correct?
A correct assumption? Is there an objection?
I'll object.
There's, Representative Brown has objected, and discussion in the committee before we ask for folks from the audience that will be affected.
Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in working out of a reasonable compromise.
Mr. McCormick, would you care to comment on the motion?
Mr. Chairman, can we just put the motion aside just for a couple, 3 minutes. I just want to ask a couple questions on Kay's proposal, how it would affect.
Well, I think it would all fall under the discussion of the motion.
All right, that's fine.
We're not
that formal?
Okay. We don't have a sergeant of arms looking over
okay.
our shoulders.
I get you.
Okay. Mr. McCormick, comments on the motion, which would essentially accept the Senate numbers, you're familiar with those, and the minimum of 10 weeks for the school.
Chairman Bundy, members of the committee, the original House version was the harshest version of all the numbers that you see there. It gave no increase at all to the proprietary sector at any level. It retained the $5,500 loan limits for all those that were 9 months in length or longer, which is, quote, 36 weeks. And in House Finance, they amended that to $4,000 for those less than 9 months. And that's the final House version. The Senate looked at that and said, that is too harsh. We don't agree to that version. And in Senate Finance, they amended the numbers that you see now that appear in the Senate version of Senate Bill 123 to have the stair-step approach in three levels. And they felt in Senate Finance when they were doing that they were compromising with the proprietary sector that was the most concerned. So the best of all possible worlds, in my view, is the Senate version. However, there's a lot of very important elements to this bill that impact greatly the vast majority of the students, 95% plus. If the Senate version is not acceptable to the House, I would hope that you could come to a reasonable compromise that people could go along with so that all the other very important aspects of that bill can survive this session. I must point out to you, though, that as you water down the Senate version of the amount you're going to allow for short-term programs, and by definition in the Senate version, a short-term program is a program of less than 30 weeks. As you water that down, you raise the level of concern of people who buy Alaska student loan bonds and people who ultimately may choose to insure those bonds or may choose not to insure the bonds. This issue is not about providing access to vocational education to students. It's not about that at all. It is about a self-sustaining loan program and the kinds of things that together we have to do to make it financially viable. And some of the decisions that we have to make to do that are very hard. They're very tough because they go contrary to the way you've operated for almost 20 years. And I don't envy the position you're in. And I'm glad you're in the position and not me. But as someone who does know a little bit about student loans, I would be less than faithful to my charge in administering the loan program if I did not tell you, in all candor, the impact that I think your deliberations will have. Thank you.
Senator Ellis.
Mr. McCormick, I agree with you on the point that this really is about us selling our bonds and having a self-sustaining program. And I was there when we converted the student loan program to this method and got rid of the general fund appropriation. But in what sense is this not about access of students to vocational education?
It's not about access in the context that almost every school that would be affected offers programs of study that are available at other schools, namely the University of Alaska and other proprietary schools that are accredited, that have a higher standard, and there are other choices for these students. Secondly, there are other programs that do subsidize this type of training. JPTA is just one. And I think it's very important to keep that in context, that what we're talking about is the level of risk we're willing to allow the fund to incur. And I'm saying to you that statistically and based on the experience of your own student loan portfolio, your experience has been poor in those short-term programs and the level of risk there is much higher. You can say to me quite accurately, well, this school X has a 50% default rate, and that means that 50 of the kids graduated, got jobs, and did well, and 50 defaulted. Now, what I have to say to you with all integrity is if you operate the loan program that way, you will ultimately go broke. You may have helped 50 kids, but the 50 that went into default will break the bank. Now, that's just the reality that ultimately someday the loan fund has to live up to, and that's what the Senate or the legislative finance report was all about, was saying that if you leave it status quo, we estimate by the year 2010 this program will have lost $60 million. And I don't dispute their numbers.
No, I appreciate that. Is there a way to quantify as we adjust these numbers? You know, we're looking for most of us on this committee, I think, are looking for a reasonable compromise between these numbers. Is there a way to quantify if you shifted up $500 this way or $1,000 in that direction, the level of concern that engenders?
I don't think I have the capability to do that. I certainly don't have any data with me today.
Not that that's necessary. I mean, yeah. I guess we can sense the direction of the concern based on the direction of the numbers, but I just wondered if there was a way to pin it down further than that. But thank you for your response.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. Mr. McCormick, do you have the authority now to distinguish between these programs based on default rate?
There is a provision in the statute that says if a school's default rate exceeds 150% of the aggregate default rate, they lose their eligibility. In the entire 20-plus year history of the program, I don't think that provision has ever been enforced. So there are no regulations on it. And I think that the correct answer is that we have a general vague jurisdiction in that area, but we have no specific language that directs us to provide that kind of enforcement. And I think if we did that under existing law, the school would probably challenge it and probably win the challenge.
Have you considered as a potential solution here, rather than cutting off these limits, because we're really making, if we go with the Senate version, a pretty severe decrease in the money that's now available for these private career training programs, that we could distinguish between them based on their history and actual performance and not make loans in the ones that were not working and continue to make the higher loans in the ones that are having the better placement and default rate?
Representative Brown, the case has never been made clear to me that really is what happened. What in reality has been my experience happens is they acquire funds from other sources to make up the difference when you impose a reduction like that. It does not necessarily equate on a one-to-one basis that those students do not attend those institutions. They utilize more JPTA funds, or they utilize funds from Native corporations. I don't think that there is a case that can be made these schools necessarily go out of business, or these students necessarily cannot attend these institutions.
But I'm asking whether you could manage on that basis. If you're concerned about the ones, you're in here telling us some of them have very high default rates, and I just point out that, you know, as we discussed on the floor, the four-year private colleges in Alaska have a default rate of 29.4, which is not that different from some of these technical ones that are causing the problem. So I'm assuming you have some that are good and some that aren't good, and I'm saying, can't you set the program up in a way that the good ones could continue and the ones that aren't performing be not loaned out to?
If I could do that, I probably would have a cabinet-level position in the Clinton administration. If I could really sort out the good from the bad, that is the core dilemma of the policymaker in student loans. It is not that easy, given the legal technicalities involved in licensing schools and allowing them to operate and all that goes with that. It's not just a simple matter of let's sort out the good ones from the bad ones. If I could go back for one moment, Representative Brown, the comment about private colleges in Alaska, there are only two. And they're both very, very small in terms of the number of kids that borrow money to go to that school. So when you have only four kids in the portfolio and two of them default, you've got a 50% default rate. So it's not truly reflective of a reasonable body of students to utilize that particular percentage. And I think we have to keep this data in context. I guess the example I'd like to use is a perfectly good school that operates a perfectly good program and has almost zero placement because there are no jobs for what they're training people to do. That school will have a high default rate, and that school legally has every right to operate, and there is no way that you should be able to shut them down, in my opinion. I don't want to see you embrace legislation that says singularly, without any consideration for any other factors, I will kick a school out of this program because of its default rate, because there are too many other factors involved there.
But I understand that. I'm trying to get you the flexibility to consider all those factors and make some rational decisions on what would make sense, not to say it's a single rate that we're going to mandate in the statute, but to give you the management authority to deal with the default rate. The institutions that are not placing their people, that have a high default rate, I think that would be, you know, a reasonable approach to it, but it sounds like you're not willing to do that.
Well,
I'm willing to do that to the extent that that is a solution to the problem, but I must admonish to you that there are certain types of short-term training that, in my opinion, have no business being financed by student loans, because, one, the cost of that training is so high in relation to the wage that they will earn. The kids would have a hard time paying the money back, all things being equal. And that type of training probably should be provided by JPTA or some other mechanism. And to saddle a student with $7,000 of debt for a job that's going to pay him $5 an hour is just not good math. It just won't work.
But we are getting a little far from the amendment that's in front of us. I did have a question that you'd mentioned that when these amounts of student loans go down, students find other sources of income. But it is true, isn't it, that these proprietary schools do not qualify for federal funds? The federal government chooses not to invest in them.
That's true. There are only a half a dozen, if that many, proprietary schools in the state of Alaska who are currently operating in the federal programs, and if I were king for a day, that would be part of the criteria for eligibility. They would have to qualify for federal student aid just to maintain the integrity of the programs they're offering.
And just as a side, I think we're asking traditional university students to apply for federal aid before they even come to the state.
That's
because the rates are better and spreads the money further. Well, other questions for Mr. McCormick on the Senator Phillips? Did you get? Are we quiet enough to address your questions?
That's why I wanted to put that motion aside for a second to deal with Representative Brown's proposal. And my question is, if we did what she is suggesting, I guess the bottom line is, how would the bond market react to something like that?
Their reaction, I think, would be you're not any worse off, but you're definitely not any better off.
So like a neutral position.
It's sort of a hold harmless position. You haven't really altered the portfolio mix a great deal. The Senate version is a dramatic change. Oh, absolutely. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But your proposal might be more politically palatable.
Are you finished?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Thank you. I just want to clarify something I said earlier, and then looking at this bill again, I realize we didn't in the House finance version of 257 or in the HES version, we didn't have the same categories, and so really our split was 9 months or more, less than 9 months. And in some, so if you take the two, what I told you fit with the less than 30 but at least 20, that's really 9 months or more in the House version, and it was less than 9 months for the lower number. So
nine weeks?
Nine months.
Nine months.
9 months. Ours was phrased in terms of months, and that's kind of the confusion here about how these numbers correlate. So I apologize for confusing the situation, but basically, if you drew the line right between those and you said that 5.5 and that 2,000, that would be 9 months or more, and the other two numbers are less than 9 months. But in any, so if you correlate that out, it looks like that in some respects the House would be higher, in some respects that particular thing would be lower than what the Senate's got in there. So I see what you're saying. The Senate did make some compromises by, for example, raising the amount in the full-time career education top category there.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Why did the House Finance use months versus weeks?
I think that's how the bill was originally proposed by the Student Loan Commission. And then it was the Senate that went to the weeks, I guess.
We do have a motion before us, and I would like to see if anybody else would like to comment on the motion. Mitch?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mitch Gravo. I represent the Hotel Motel Association. That's why I'm here. I've been following the VOC-Ed folks around for the last 3 or 4 days, and the reason is because a lot of the entry-level people that work in the hotel industry in the state come from the VOC-Ed programs in the state, and they have an interest in this bill. As I've done to everybody I've talked to about this issue, I apologize for entering the debate at this late level. If I've known about it earlier, I would have testified in front of your committee and talked to you earlier. First thing I'd like to point out is the Senate version of this bill has been rejected by the House twice. So if you're looking for a solution this session, the House people have heard everything that's been said here more than once, I think, and I don't know if any of those votes are going to change. A solution that I would suggest, the Senate, I think, what's driving the Senate bill is the default rate. What's driving the House version is a fairness rate. And I think a compromise that you might consider is one which, number one, mandates that a default management program be instituted by the Post-Secondary Commission to sort of address this issue, to try and manage this issue. And then secondly, to possibly consider a two-tiered system, Mr. Chairman, where you establish what a unacceptable default rate for the VOC-Ed programs would be. And after a period of, I don't know, 1 year or 2 years, if a school falls into that tier, if they have a default rate that's greater than that percentage, then they would get, or be, or their students would be eligible for loans under the Senate version of the bill. But for the good schools who have good programs, who place all their students, who have very low or minimal default rates, they would be able to get the loan amounts, the more generous loan amounts that are in the House version, because they're not the problem. The concern we have is that you've got to use an analogy, you have an infected thumb, and the Senate version of this bill cuts off the arm to take care of the infected thumb. And I'm just suggesting that, you know, we're not arguing that there's a default problem. We're not arguing that it needs to be addressed. We would like to help you address that, but our concern is the good programs and the good schools are suffering, and the good kids are suffering as a consequence of the solution in the Senate program. And if you considered a default management program and a two-tiered approach, you either, you know, get your default rate down, and if you don't, your students can't borrow as much money.
Or any, perhaps.
Or any.
Questions for?
With the suggestions you're asking, is that means we have to have a free conference committee.
Well, yeah. That's true, and we don't have a free conference
committee. We don't have the powers to do that.
I think the practical effect of the suggestion would be to cancel this bill and start anew next year.
Mr. Chairman, when I made my motion, my opening comment was I think we need to come back and address this year. The concept of a two-tier system is more than we can take on in a conference committee. And I would suggest that along that same line, you can address the same problem by simply requiring certain schools to, if they're not certified or eligible for federal education funding, to furnish their own insurance for their own student loans. I mean, that would take care of the problem. It would assure, it would meet the state's requirements to maintain the fiducial soundness of the student loan program.
I see we have President Komisar and Mrs. Redmond. Do you care to comment on the, thank you for your comments. Well, we have a motion before us that would accept the Senate numbers and the minimum of 10 weeks. I would like to offer an amendment to the motion that would accept the that would put in another tier from 6 to 10 weeks at the level of $1,000 and raise the halftime less than 20 weeks to 1,500. In the spirit of compromise.
What page?
This page?
Yeah, let's do it page and line so let's see. I know that.
Well, I was.
Okay. So Senate version all the way down to the very
we'd have
bottom.
We'd have it drafted in the bill, but it's easier, I think, on the spreadsheet.
Well, I understand that, but I want to see how.
The Senate version, the Senate version down to halftime less than
right.
20 weeks.
Yeah, 6 to 10 weeks, $1,000, right?
The halftime less than 20 weeks would be $1,500.
Okay.
So that would be a change in the Senate version. A new tier would then exist from 6 to 10 weeks at $1,000.
That would be.
So that was your number, but this would stay 3,000.
The 6 to 10 weeks, of course, would be full-time students. Yeah. Discussion of the amendment to the motion.
Well, be on page 2, lines, would that be on 7?
That would be
that's what I'm looking at.
CS for Senate Bill 123 is the most recent finance.
Finance.
So I think on the finance version, what you're saying, it would be on page 2, line 7, right?
Yes.
That's where you would put it in.
Page 2, line 7, you said?
Yeah. Right? No, the Senate version. That's what we're dealing with right now.
I have Senate. Where it
okay,
says
you want the Senate version.
The commission may make a loan for summer term. I must
page
not
have the
page 2, right. Line 7? That's
what I did not have.
Okay, you need CS for SB 123 finance.
Yes,
you've got the House version.
Yeah. Thank you. See, the motion was to, the original motion, Mr. Chairman, was made by Representative Vesey to accept the Senate version.
Period.
And what you're suggesting
is
an amendment, and that's what I'm want to refer back to this bill so I can take a look how it, how the lay of the land looks on the overall. So
you're correct. It's page 2, line 7. We've got 3,000. The 1,000 would become 1,500.
Okay. That's better.
And
new paragraph.
Then there would be
a
new paragraph
six.
That would say full time, 6 to 10 weeks, $1,000.
6 to 10 weeks, $1,000. Okay.
Might I ask, Mr. Yeah. McCormick and anybody else that want to comment on that amendment? We can do it either way.
My comments still stand.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the problem is we can't go in free conference right now, and we're out of time, so that's the bottom line.
No, that that.
It's only to this issue of the amounts.
Request powers.
Yeah, I know. I know. But the problem is getting the six of us.
And just for clarification here, Representative Veazey, I assume your motion was to the amounts of the Senate version. We haven't addressed the other three amendments that talk about the inmates, AmeriCorps, and the positioning for collection.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
That's correct. Okay. Does the committee understand the motion and the amendment to the motion? Is there an objection to the amendment?
Object.
There is an objection to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment?
No, we only have an amendment to the motion.
Amendment to the motion.
Okay.
The amended motion, which would accept the Senate numbers and add the new category of full-time 6 to 10 week at $1,000, changing halftime for less than 20 weeks to 1,500. Does the committee understand the motion before us? Is there any objection to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, could we have just a quick moment here to confer?
We'll have an Eddie's oral.
Right.
It is
9:53.
We're on record. Of course, the House is going to go in at 10 o'clock, so we can either finish our work or come back later. Senator Phillips.
Okay, the original motion is to accept the Senate version of this bill with the amendment on page 2, line 7, where it says $1,000, insert 1,500. And then right after line 15, you're going to have to put a new subsection 6, and that'll be 6 to 10 weeks will be $1,000.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay, for the record.
Okay. And further discussion of the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I plan to oppose the motion. I appreciate your effort, but I don't believe it's a compromise that will find approval in the House, and I think we're in danger of losing the good things in the rest of the bill. So I think your amendment to the motion moves in the right direction, but I think the $3,000 figure there for full-time, I think the Senate version had the right fiduciary kind of impulse behind it, but I don't think will be acceptable to a majority of the people that need to agree to it. So that's because I don't want to lose the rest of the bill is the reason I'm objecting to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I think if we could change that $3,000 to $4,000, we would have a much better opportunity to sell that. And I'd say, that going down from $5,500 to $3,000 is a big decrease from the status quo. It's 2,000 below the House version. So okay. I'd ask the senators to please consider that, and that the 4,000, if we could change that 3,000 to 4,000.
Mr. Chairman,
on the other hand, the Senate has increased full time by $1,000. So there are compromises already built in. Representative Veazey.
Mr. Chairman, the reason that I made the motion to accept the Senate version is there seems to be a consensus that we need to address this area further. The more we dilute it and compromise it at this time, the less incentive we're going to have to come back next year and address this problem. And I do think we need to come back next year. I think that vocational education is an area that we have not adequately addressed. But there are many, many problems, and throwing money at it is not the solution at this time.
All right. Becky, would you take the vote, please?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative
Bundy?
Yes.
Senator
Green?
Yes.
Senator
Veazey?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Okay, we have then adopted amendment to the Senate version that I would call number one. We have further to address the, if the committee is comfortable, we can address this in one motion. To accept House amendments that you have before you that are labeled 1, 3 and 4. We'll add.
Mr. Chairman, am I mistaken, or did we adopted the amendment to the amendment but never took action on?
No, we took an action on the we had a motion from Representative Veazey to amend the Senate version or to accept the Senate numbers. We amended that without objection, and then we just had the vote.
We still have that in front of us.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I thought we were voting at that time on the amendment, your amendment to the motion by Representative Veazey.
No, we had adopted that earlier without objection.
I don't see it that way, Con.
Maybe we could ask the committee secretary.
Yeah.
I apologize about this.
Becky, were you listening closely? Well, I'd be happy for
We have the
purposes of closure here.
We could go very quickly.
Yeah.
If I misunderstood, I asked if there were objections, and I didn't hear any, and so I had said, okay, we've adopted, but
I apologize. You said discussion, and I said I plan to object to the motion because I didn't think the House would accept it. That's what that discussion. I'm sorry if I misunderstood.
We will then have before us the amendment to Representative Veazey's motion to accept the Senate numbers, and again, that was the 1,500 and then the 6 to 10 week for 1,000. That's clear?
Yes.
And you are objecting?
Yes.
And now we're voting on the amendment. Becky, please take the vote.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Representative
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Okay, now we have before us the main motion, which, as amended, would accept the Senate numbers.
And the amendment.
As amended.
As amended.
Okay, and now, Becky, if you would take the vote again. Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Representative Biden?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
All right, we have then, I think that cleared the error to where we are. What we have, you have a package of amendments before you that are labeled 1, 2, 3, 4.
Chairman, I'll move acceptance of the three House amendments.
The three House amendments that are labeled 1, 3, and 4. It's been moved. It's been objected. Representative Veazey.
I move to divide the question.
All right. We will start with the question is clearly divisible. We'll start with amendment that is labeled House Amendment Number 1. And Senator Ellis, would you move number 1?
Sure. I'll move Amendment Number 1.
We have a motion for House Amendment Number 1. Are there any objections? Hearing none, we have adopted House Amendment labeled Number 1.
Chairman, I'll move House Amendment Number 2, or Number 3, rather, as Number 2.
House Amendment Number 3 has been moved.
Object.
And there's an objection. Discussion?
Senator Brown, this, as I understand this, that before the release date of the inmate, the time limit is 2 months, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
The inmate would complete their program
within 2 months.
Within 2 months of getting out.
What's within 2 months of getting out?
And Mr. Chairman,
why explain? This is new to me. So.
Yes.
Let Representative Brown speak to it. It is her amendment.
I offered this amendment at the request of the Department of Law, the Department of Corrections, in order to ensure some continued access to education, secondary education, for people who are incarcerated and are coming out of prison. Right now we have the Pell Grants, the federal program. Those have been eliminated by Congress. The Cleary settlement provides that should the Pell Grants ever change their status, the state then is obligated to reopen that portion of the Cleary agreement. They have been having negotiations about it. The Department of Law believes this is the most cost-effective way to address this. If we provide, as the Senate bill does, an absolute prohibition, we are likely to be ordered to provide pay tuition and books. All this is a tuition and books opportunity for people incarcerated to compete for and have the obligation to pay back student loans. I believe that it does make some sense because recidivism goes way down for people who have been able to get an education.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the timing than anything else.
Okay.
I was under the impression that 2 months prior to getting out, he can get a student loan. Is that correct, or is my impression wrong?
You could get one. You could get one before that. The reason this is pegged to the 2 months is so that the person will have a reasonable opportunity. There will be they're going to pay it back. They're going to be getting out within 2 months. They've been studying, say, for the last year of their sentence. They get out. They start paying back their loan. So they are incurring an obligation. It is not a grant like the current situation is, where federal government is giving grants. We're saying let's make that person responsible for their own education, like everyone else is, and just not close off this opportunity to them. There's nothing here that would prohibit the Student Loan Corporation from developing standards or screening these people if they determine that they're not a good risk to make the loans.
So they get a loan. Basically, the bottom line is they can get a loan while they're in prison.
Yes.
And they must finish their program
within 2 months. Or if somebody's coming out on parole and wishes to apply for a loan so that they could study after immediately coming out, that would also be covered or possible, that they could apply as they were coming out.
I thought it was, okay, my impression of the amendment from a few days ago, hearing about it, of course I didn't see it, was that 2 months prior to getting out, that person will be eligible for a student loan. That's what I thought this amendment was all about. But apparently, the person's in and getting a loan. Okay.
No, and I would add that, from a point of public policy, I'm not real excited about taking loans away from hardworking, honest folks and giving them to inmates. But I've been led to believe there would be 4 or 5 people that would fall in this category. And again, in the spirit of compromise, I was willing to accept it. Representative Easy had a comment.
I was going to comment that I think it's, regardless of the dollar amount involved, it's fiduciarily irresponsible to take a fund, which we are responsible for administering. We don't finance it. We don't fund it. We just administer it but through the laws that we passed, and to start using it to finance a out-of-court settlement that the state's involved in that needs to be gone back into and addressed. For that reason, just on the principle, not the dollar amount that's involved, but just the nature of the irresponsible fiduciary action we'd be taking, I just think is bad precedence.
Other discussion of amendment number 2.
Becky, would you take the vote, please?
Senator Green?
No.
Senator Beasy?
No.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Brown?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. 3-3, and this amendment does not pass. And
Mr. Chairman, I move the House Amendment Number 4.
Yeah. We have a motion for House Amendment Number 4. This places the collection, order of collection, puts the student loan behind crime victims. Is there any objection? Hearing none, we've adopted Amendment Number 4. So, in total, we have then adopted Amendment Number 1 and Number 4, as well as the amended version of the Senate numbers. On what was Amendment House Amendment Number 2? Further business for the Conference Committee. Hearing none, I will take our report. Ms.
Redmond. No, I said I didn't want to say anything, but after Representative Brown's comments, I really feel like I do want to say something and urge you to support this legislation. I know that you're not happy with the numbers, but this, as you know, University of Alaska students represent over 60% of all the student loans that are out there right now. So this is a very big issue to the university. We just raised our tuition almost 20% this year, eliminated the consolidated fee. Our students right now are paying $12,000 a year to go to school. Our graduate programs are really pegged, particularly the professional school programs that we're trying to start, like social work, where we're doubling the normal tuition rate for those programs in order to get them going. Without these loan limit increases, I think our students will be in a great deal of difficulty. So I urge you to support the legislation. I know it will be more difficult in the House because of this, but if you take that into consideration in the debate, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. And if we have no further business to come before the committee, we'll just stand adjourned.
Yeah, now I'll make sure.
Yeah.